everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
Yes. I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make us ask win. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Hear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, it wasn't pretty, and it came with some considerable side effects, but Alabama bested the Huskies to advance to Tampa. Sometimes good enough is good enough, right?
Man, right now all that matters is to go forward. Yep. And obviously we would have loved to have, you know, hung it on them. Considering they lost to USC, we definitely should have, the margin of victory would have been nice for it to be bigger. But right this second in the big scheme of things, does it really matter? No, it doesn't.
No, it really doesn't. You know, in any time you're in a playoff situation, the name of the game is, you know, win in advance. And so, you know, putting on 24, you know, I'll give Washington a lot of credit. They played a really sound, defensive game. I think Alabama did as well. But, yeah, 24-7, would have liked a bigger margin than that. Frankly, expected a bigger margin than that. But I'll take one more point than they've got, and we get to live to play another day. What jumped out at you on offense?
You know, man, I hate to be a broken record, but, you know, early in this game, I felt like there was lots of times that Jalen was calling his own number and, you know, pulling the ball down and not handing the ball off or not pitching the ball on the sweep. And, you know, I went back and saw numerous plays that, you know, would have been nice big gainers, easy first downs, move the chain. And I don't know if he's just not comfortable with the zone read, and if he's just not comfortable with, like, when am I supposed to hand it off and when am I supposed to keep it. But, you know, they talked about how this is a whole different game plan, a whole different scheme than he ran with his father, who was his coach in high school. And so, you know, there's too many weeks I'm seeing this over and over and over again that, oh, if you would have handed the ball there up the middle, he would have gotten 10 yards, but you kept it and went around the tackle and took a loss of 3 yards. And I just see it too many times to think that it just must be a lack of comfort or a lack of understanding or just a combination of several things, because this is the Jalen Hurts I've seen for many weeks now. And, you know, I don't think he's getting better. I don't think he's progressing. I think had Bo Scarborough not been there, you know, this would have been a very, very tight ball game.
You know, I'm not gonna argue with you on that. I think that, you know, while the running game, you know, was the predominant, you know, force, you know, 78% of the play calls were rushes, but you know, Jalen had as many attempts as Bo. Both had 19, and there were certainly, I agree, a number of times where Jalen would have done well to hand the ball off. I don't know what the what is. I don't know if he's uncomfortable. I don't know I don't know what that what is, but. And as much as I hate to use the word, I just feel that he has regressed as the season has gone on. You know, he started out the season more accurate passing, reading the plays a little bit better, and sort of there was a pinnacle there in the season. You know, pick a game where he really stood out. Tennessee might be one of those games, and there's certainly been others where he performed very well. But you know, this was one of his lesser outings, and you know, is it him? Is it the play calling? I don't know, and to some level, I don't really care. But let's talk about Bo, because Bo, I mean, Tommy, is that the best we've seen him play at Alabama?
No, it is, man, and you know, Bo is this is what the hype was at the beginning of the season.
Yes,
he's as big as Derrick Henry. He may be even a little bigger than Derrick Henry. He's equally as fast, if not a little faster. I think yards after contact, he's probably even more physical.
Yeah.
And so I saw something, Dave, that shocked me, that 120 yards of his 184 yards were after contact. And you know, that's a huge number. And so take nothing away from Derrick Henry by any means.
Sure.
But Bo Scarborough, he's a little different type of runner. He's nasty, right? Like he wants to run over you. And I think this is a kid that, you know, I remember early in summer practices and watching some of the videos, you know, Saban, he'd come back to the huddle and there was a couple of things where Saban's like, you know, I know you can run through people. I don't need you to run through people. I need you to do a better job of trying to make people miss and stuff. And what I noticed in this game is it's an evolution. Like we were just talking about Jalen, to be fair, I think there's a combination of factors at work with Jalen. Okay. I think there's offensive game plan. Maybe Lane Kiffin was checked out, you know, maybe he wasn't comfortable, all those things. But Bo, I think Bo has slowly but surely, you know, been allowed to be brought on slowly by this coaching staff, which was smart. And that touchdown run where all the players just kind of stopped and thought he was tackled, and he just kept making people miss, and then he cut across the field. Man, I was so excited for this kid. I mean, you know, Heisman's not tomorrow, not saying that. But that run that he made there, which is really, you know, was the difference in this ball game, you just had a little bit of everything. You had a stiff arm. You had to put your hand down to push him down to the ground. You had to run over a player. You had a cutback. You had a vision. You had to turn on the jets across the field kind of deal. Dude, that was awesome, man. This is him. I think just slowly understanding what he needs to do to be the type of running back that Coach Saban wants. And I think this is his coming out party. This is what we've talked about with, you know, with players in the past, right? We're going to look back at that game and we're going to say, this was what catapulted him into next year.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And you know, there's a reality that players are not ready made, right? They don't come in and they're ready made to sort of be all that they can be. They have to grow, they have to evolve, they have to get comfortable, they have to learn the system, all of those, you know, learn their role, all of those kinds of things. And there was an expectation that Bo was gonna be all of this, you know, way back then, and he wasn't. And you know, there's probably some disappointment with the fans, probably some disappointment, you know, even with Bo. One of the things that we've talked about that really jumped out to me, you know, in a different way this week, we've talked about Bo being a player who's had injury. I think, you know, coming out of high school, he had an injury. Coming to Alabama, he had an injury. And there's been a number of times this season where he would take a hit, and it's almost like he was taking inventory of himself. There was a lesser opponent, maybe it was Kentucky, maybe it was Western Kentucky, earlier in the season where he had a nice run, but he got popped really good. And he just seemed to take inventory there and not feel really comfortable and went out of the game and didn't come back. And I can't speak for what exactly he was feeling, but there's been a little bit of when a player gets hurt, sometimes it sticks with them in mentally. And that's just not me sort of pointing fingers, you know, talk to players, right? This is a real phenomena. You can have it. You can have sort of a mental lapse that can last longer than the physical injury. And we've speculated that maybe that's impacted Bo a little bit. Well, he came out in this ball game, and there was no hint of that. There were a number of times where he carried it two and three times consecutively. We've not seen a lot of that. There were times where he would take a lick and then get right back up. And then, you know, you mentioned the long touchdown run. The first touchdown run was a shorter run, but it was a very, very physical run. And that was fun to go back and watch it two or three times. I probably watched it four or five, six times. You know, he took that initial hit and essentially said, "You will not tackle me. I will not be tackled." And just ran with that type of, you know, physicality and that type of abandon. And that is what we've been looking forward to getting from him. That was especially fun to watch. And I agree. I think you said it well. I think this is a coming out party for Bo. And, you know, we've got another game against Clemson, and then we've got the rest of his career. It'll be neat to, you know, maybe be able to point back to this this Washington game again and again and say that's where he came out ready to play.
Well, you know, I think back to Derrick Henry, right, when he had his game against Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Right? In that semifinal game. And he ran like abandoned, and Oklahoma couldn't stop him. And it was like, wow, where has this Derrick Henry been? Well, I think, like you said, you know, it's just taken him a while to get to this point. But I think that, you know, had he not been available in this game, I think they absolutely had to have him, you know, in this ball game. I think it was interesting that, you know, he came in very early too, Dave. I mean, like, yeah. You know, the first series of the game, Damian Harris gets the first carry, and he rushes for 4 yards. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, four and out, they punt the ball. And then the very next series, you know, he comes in halfway through the series. And so Damian Harris comes in and rushes the first three times of the series, and he has a rush for 2 yards, and then 8 yards, and then 3 yards, none of which are bad. And so what was so interesting to me is that third carry by Damian Harris was on a 2nd and 2, and he got a first down. And so on his two carries there, Damian Harris got the first down, right? 1st and 10, he gets 8 yards, and he gets 3 yards. And so Damian's had 4 carries, and he's not doing anything bad. Bo comes in, and when he comes in on his first carry and he rushes for 12 yards, it was just a different type of a run.
Right.
I mean, nothing against Damian Harris, who was a number one running back in the nation, 5-star running back, who, by the way, you know, ended up going over 1,000 yards in this ball game. But Bo just brings a different element to things, just a different physicality. And, you know, you said it best a minute ago when you talked about the number of carries. When I went back and looked at the stats, and we talked about me liking Jalen Hurts carrying the ball 7 to 8 times, okay. When I saw he had 19 and Damian Harris only got 9,
yeah,
that blew my mind, man. That absolutely blew my mind. And so what else jumped out at you? Because I know you've probably read the same things I have that talked about the game plan was to be, you know, protect the football and how good the secondary is and how many turnovers Washington has gotten, albeit against Pac-10 schools. Are you surprised that we didn't try to get the wide receivers more involved in this game? I mean, dude, there were times that Calvin Ridley was out wide left by himself. The DB is 15 yards off of him on the play, and I'm sitting here saying, run a slant. It's a safe pass to Jalen Hurts. He can make that throw. Hit him on the run for 8 yards, and he might just run by him and score a touchdown. I mean, do you think it was the right call for our receiving core to only have 7 catches on the day?
No, I don't think that was the right call. I do wonder, and this is a theme that we've called out a couple of times, did we just sort of outthink ourselves? And this is where I want to be careful that we're not necessarily contradicting ourselves, because there, you know, situationally we have wanted more of the running game. Granted, I would have liked to have seen Damian gotten more of those carries and Bo get a couple more carries than Jalen get so many. But I do think there was an opportunity to attack with the passing game. And it's as if we said, well, this is the best secondary that we're going to face, so we're just going to run the ball, and you know, we're not going to pass. I mean, you know, we completed 7 passes. Now I'll say this about
14.
Seven of 14. I'll say that, and there were a couple of throwaways there, but the numbers are what they are. It seemed to be that we were making a point to go to OJ. You know, he had 4 catches, but he probably had 2 or 3 that where he was targeted, and just the pass wasn't there. So I thought it was interesting. Even when we tried to pass, it was a more conservative passing approach, you know, passing to the tight end as opposed to taking the shots down the field. And with the success running the ball, You would think that some of the play action opportunities would have been there. And it, a couple of times it did look like we teed up to play action, but they had good coverage. So I don't want to take anything away from Washington. I do think there were opportunities there. And I do think that, you know, again, if we had pounded the ball with the running backs as opposed to the quarterbacks, I think we probably would have had a little more success there. I don't want to complain and go sour grapes, you know, too much. But I think if we're going to run the ball, then just run the ball.
No, I think you're right. It goes back to what I've said about Jalen Hurts doesn't need to have, you know, that many carries. And so you said it best. I think 50 runs in this game was okay. If Bo would have had 25 and Damian and Josh Jacobs would have had 40 of the 50 carries.
Sure.
And Jalen would have had 10, I'd have been totally okay with that. Like, I'd love to see a naked bootleg from Jalen Hurts whenever, like, you know, after you've been pounding the ball, have him do a naked boot or something, right? Use his speed. Use his physical presence. I'm okay with that. I just, you know, 19 of those 50 didn't need to be from him, as you mentioned. You said it best when you said the play action pass, man. I mean, you know, Jake Coker's best friend last year was a play action pass. And what I found so interesting, man, is the first play of the game, they did the Ardarius Stewart, you know, come by the quarterback, and they did a play action on the first play. He just didn't get the ball to O.J. Howard.
Right.
He just didn't throw the ball well. If he'd have thrown the ball well, O.J. Howard was wide open on that play.
Yep.
And so I'm actually okay with you exploiting O.J. Howard. It gives them something else to think about because you haven't used O.J. Howard the way you really need to all season, let's face it, right? I'm sorry. O.J. Howard matched up against most middle linebackers. If O.J. Howard today lined up against Reuben Foster and just ran a go route down the hash, I guarantee you he could beat Reuben Foster 6 or 7 out of 10 times.
Sure.
And so I actually love the very first play from scrimmage was a play action. I was like, look at this. There's a wrinkle. You know, you actually have like – I thought that was great on Lane Kiffin's part. I was like, oh, you've done the little stretch the field you always do, but you're doing a play action on the very first play.
Yep.
And so I just wish they'd have done more of that. And so tell me what you think about the development. I guess we could have started the show with this. What do you think about the news that, you know, that Kiffin will not be with the team for the final game? What do you think is behind that?
Yeah, you know, wow, that's a loaded question, right? I think that, you know, I think he was doing two jobs, you know, and I don't want to just sound like I'm towing the company line. So, you know, I think you could read behind the sort of the coordinated press releases and, you know, even Kiffin going on the Feinbaum show and both parties, you know, Saban and Kiffin both pretty much speaking the company line. I do think there's merit to he was trying to do two jobs. Now it doesn't serve Kiffin that he apparently struggled to do that, but you know, Kirby Smart was able to do it just last year. And you can talk about, you know, defense versus the offense differences and Saban having a stronger role in the defense and probably have a case there. I just think the team seemed disoriented. You know, the game plan seemed flat, and I have heard or I've seen sort of anecdotally, and I don't know how much stock I necessarily put into this, but I've seen some conjecture that some of the players were complaining that are commenting that, you know, we're running plays out here that we didn't necessarily practice. And yeah, I want to be careful putting a lot of stock in that, but, you know, there could definitely be some merit to that. I think Sark being in the system all season, 100%, you know, on board, he's not trying to do another job. I think it was a natural sort of transition. And if we didn't have someone like that already in place, then it wouldn't have happened. If it could not be as seamless as this is going to be, then it wouldn't happen. And for all the conjecture that, you know, Sark has is being thrust into a new role and all of that. Let's not forget that he's done this before. Sark has been on the big stage before. He's got a pair of big boy pants. He can do this. And let's not undermine the role that we're not going to know. We don't necessarily know what his role has been day to day, but let's not for a split second think that he's not been very engaged with the players and very active with the players in practice, in meeting rooms, in prep sessions. He's just not a coach on the field, but that does not mean he's not been active. And that does not mean that he's going to be a new voice. I've been hearing a lot of that, that this is going to be a new voice and the fragile team and quarterback won't be able to handle the new voice. That is just the lamest, you know, horse crap that you could ever come across. I would think that he's been very vocal and very hands-on in his capacity all season. So I think it's a hand in glove. I think it's going to be kind of fun to see. But and heck, you know, what is Clemson? What do they do? Like, well, how do we game plan for this? So in some respects, I've always been a fan of Kiffin. I've always kind of liked him. I think we all kind of knew his time was going to expire. It expired sort of in an odd time, but you know, that was very Kiffin of him.
Well, there's been discussions out there that, you know, he was late for meetings, and there's been discussions about, you know, some of the things that were said when, you know, he was given the mic and allowed to speak. You know, I thought it was interesting. He even said today, that he was not mentally there. You know, I mean, this was his own words. I mean, I found it very interesting that, you know, he was quoted as saying that he thought it would be easier than it was to juggle both of these things. But the biggest thing that I thought, or I found interesting is he, in his own words, said he wasn't there mentally during the Peach Bowl. And right. Said leaving Alabama was best for all parties. And so, you know, I think that him and Kirby Smart are just different people, right? Yeah. And Kirby Smart has been with Saban for a long, long time. And Kirby Smart is a different personality person. And, you know, we'll never know the true reason, but I think it's a big gamble to do. Granted, Sark has been, you know, with him at USC and head coach at Washington and head coach at USC, blah, blah, blah. But it's still a big gamble, dude. It's the national championship game.
but Sark has been with the team all season too. He's spent a lot of time with Kiffin, and so they are going to be they're going to have some similarities in their philosophies, but it's not like he's coming off the street. He's also got a year, a full season under his belt with this team and with these players. And I think that he's been probably active in practice and meeting rooms with these players. He's not Johnny come lately. He's another coach that's been on the team, you know, just sort of stepping up to play a little bit of a different role. I think it makes for a lot of headlines, but you know, you compared him to Kirby. Hey, different strokes for different folks. It is hard to do both things. I completely agree with that. Don't challenge that. And I think Sark is going to step in, and I think it's going to be a lot more smooth than, you know, the breathless media. In the clickbait, clickbait, all that stuff. It's going to be so much more seamless than all of that is making it out to be.
Oh, I'm sure. I just think that Lane Kiffin is Lane Kiffin, right?
Yeah.
And I think that Lane Kiffin just it doesn't surprise me, man. It's Lane Kiffin. I guess when I saw the news, I was less surprised. It obviously would have benefited Lane Kiffin to hang around, you know, for him to be there with them through this. But you know, I to your point, from an Alabama's fan's perspective, it is at least as good for us of a situation as it can be.
Yeah, and if it weren't this good of a situation, let's be clear, it wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened if Sark hadn't already been named the successor, if he weren't already on the staff, if he weren't, you know, if the transition wasn't as seamless as it really is going to be, then it wouldn't have happened. And it's such, you know, that this morning when I first saw it, I just kind of grinned and said, yeah, that sounds about right. And just went about my day, and I went back and read some articles, and you know, everything that I read said exactly the same stuff. And I was like, yep, this is just, you know, this is sort of made by press release sort of thing. And then all the conjecture is just that, it's just mindless conjecture and everyone trying to grab a headline and get some clicks and stuff like that. And I'm going to be so much more boring than that. It's not going to be that big of a deal.
Well, it does make you wonder how much it played into this ball game.
Sure.
Because he did not seem like the same type of Lane Kiffin on the sideline to me.
No, he didn't. And there were some wonky stuff. There were some wonky stuff with the play calling. You know, I think it was a third and short, and we had our Ardarius Stewart lined up in the backfield. And what do? You hand the ball to Ardarius Stewart, you know, in the backfield, and the running lane to the outside, if he had bounced it outside, was wide open. But Ardarius not having, you know, gotten a lot of carries in, you know, from the running back position, he cuts it inside where it looks like there's a little bit of a hole, but it closes quickly.
Oh, dude, there would have been a big gain outside.
Right.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
That might be
one of the plays, Dave, that they're like, we didn't run this in practice last week.
Well, that's one of those things. I mean, Tommy, this goes back, God, this goes back pre-podcast for us, you know, where we would have, you know, I mean, this is DeBose stuff, right? This is how bad some of this is. This play call is DeBosean, right? Because it's not a bad play call, and it's executed well, except for
who you got getting the ball.
Yes. Who you got getting the ball.
Oh, the blocking. I'm gonna tell you real quick. The blocking scheme was actually quite good.
Right.
And Calvin Ridley was cracking back on the linebacker. If you would have had Damien Harris or Bo or Jacobs, one of your three tailbacks with the ball, they would have gained 20, 30, 40 yards on that play.
And that's not a knock on Ardarius. It's just that's not his skill set. Running from the running back position is not his skill set. And so what do? We've got a really good play call that's executed really, really well. We just don't have the right personnel in a key position relative to the play. And this is go by, I mean, we used to call it driveway talk, right? When you and I used to talk football, you know, years ago, watching, you know, the DeBose and those kind of teams, where we would just do, and gosh, we did it then, like multiple times a game for seasons, where we would have decent play calls. We just wouldn't have the right personnel group in to execute it. And this just felt like that. It just felt discombobulated that, you know, we're going to do this sort of chintzy kind of play with Ardarius sort of lined up out of position. And he's lined up in the backfield before, but he's not gotten the ball. And if he does get it, it's on a sprint out. It's a version of an end around almost, right? Because he's going to run, you know, to the sidelines. But this was not that. And so it was just executed poorly, only by function of who was running the ball.
No, absolutely, man. Well, talk me real quick before we flip the field here. Jalen Hurts and how free he is with the ball, you know, since he's carrying the ball many more times than I would like.
Yeah.
That fumble, you know, thank you, Jonah Williams, true freshman, once again for making a play. Dude, the fumble recovery was at our 38-yard line. It's still, you know, it's still a ball game, right? It's still a ball game at that point. And you know, here we are, and it's 17-7, and thank goodness, you know, we've gotten an interception return for a touchdown, or it would be, you know, it would be 10-7. at the half, and you can't turn the ball over like that on a 38-yard line.
No, and I'll give a little bit of, you know, I'll say two things, and they'll sound a little bit contradictory, and I don't intend it that way, but, you know, Jalen's good for about a fumble a game, and as much as I hate to say that, that's kind of what we've seen, and that is absolutely something that's going to have to be cleaned up. I'll say this also, too, though, about you take a running quarterback that, you know, the whole thing is, you know, is he going to pitch it? Is he going to keep it? Is he going to hand it off? And sometimes to maintain that illusion, you have to carry the ball a little differently. You can't tuck it high and tight and maintain the illusion that you're going to pitch it or throw it maybe. And so sometimes when he's carrying it loose in one hand, I don't like that, especially in traffic, and it's easy to have it knocked out, but that can help maintain the illusion that you're going to pitch it or pass it. And so I don't know if I'm just making stuff up or if there's something to that, but you know, if he's tucking it high and tight like a running back, then, you know, clearly he's not doing any of the others. And if we're trying to give the illusion or the read that he may do something else with the ball, that can impact how he carries it.
Well, I think you solve part of this problem by, you know, just not having him carry the ball as much.
Sure, sure.
And what's so frustrating, man, is we really had such good field position, you know, for most of this second half.
Yes.
I mean, that's why this was so painful, that we could have just absolutely put this team away.
Yeah. What you got, mini game ball?
You know, it could go a couple different ways. You know, it's I don't want to do the obvious one, so I'm not going to. I'm going to let you do that one. you know, I'm gonna say for this game, you know, I think I'm just going to give it to the offensive line.
Okay.
I want to give it specifically to Jonah Williams for that fumble recovery, because that was a huge play. You know, I just think that. I thought the line played really well. They opened a lot of holes for Bo, for him to be able to do what he did. And, I think, you know, it's what I've been looking for all season, right? I mean, this was last year's LSU game. This was the physicality that I like. And, so I'm going to give it to the offensive line.
You know, we've been talking football, too long if we can predict each other's mini game ball. But I have no doubt that you've predicted that, you know, probably the easiest mini game ball pick all season is Garrett Dieter's block on Bo's run. Opposite side of the field. He knows from jump that he's not getting the ball, that he is not going to be involved in the play, except for it's a long run and he positions himself to be involved in the play. Bo probably would have scored, but you get hustle points with me. And Garrett's been a player that has truly exhibited. Maybe his catch production hasn't been what we thought it might be, but his production in other ways, I think, has been outstanding. And he's the kind of guy that you know, if New England and Belichick can get their hands on him, you know, he's going to be a guy that everyone knows knows who he is. I just like the hustle that he demonstrates on the field. So, tip of the cap to Garrett Dieter.
All right. Well, what do you have on defense, man? What's the first thing that jumped out at you with this vaunted Washington Huskies offense that was averaging like 45 points a game?
Yeah, and I know it was against Pac-10, and I know it was against a lesser, you know, sort of opponents, but they did it nonetheless. And there's a lot of teams that played sort of lesser schedules that didn't do it. I do like their quarterback. I'm not surprised that they scored first, but I just think the defense was the Alabama defense was just stifling. We held them to, you know, 44 rushing yards, 150 passing, you know, 194 on the game. Take away 64 from their scoring drive, and you know we shut them down. I think pretty remarkably. There was a point. Probably early in the third quarter, I was watching the game with some folks, and you know, it was 17-7. The game was it felt like, you know, forever, and you know, I turned to the folks, you know, very early in the third quarter, and I said, you know, we just might as well start milking the clock here because they're not going to get to 17 and everything we add to that. And, you know, we only added a touchdown, but you know, they looked at me like, you know, hey, they're going to get to 17. I said, they don't get to 17. By the time we got to the fourth quarter, I said, they're not going to score again. And so the defense was just that stifling. And it's fun to see when they perform that well. And, you know, they just had another top shelf performance.
Well, you know, Washington came into this game, you know, when you see that their leading tailback is 5'10", 195 pounds, mm-hmm. he's just not the bruising type of back, right?
No, and He got dinged up early. It was early in the game, and it was kind of fun, you know, watching that. You know, early in the game, he got dinged up, and he was sort of limping off. And then later in the game, you know, the announcers were saying he just hasn't, you know, performed to his standard. I said, guys, it's on your own air. He has walked off the field, you know, gimpy, and you guys aren't noticing that. And I typically really love Blackledge, and he said a lot of smart stuff, but I had to call him out on that one.
Well, it just, you know, they weren't going to be able to run the ball.
Right.
And this is a quarterback who scrambled one time for a first down, but he's not a dual threat quarterback.
Well, he had no interest in doing that again.
No. And I mean, these type of quarterbacks, right? I mean, right now this team can get to you with four. And so when they scored that first touchdown, you know, in a similar fashion, I was like, okay, well, that's going to be their only touchdown. And I saw the Washington fans and they were all excited. And I was like, okay, well, I'm happy for them, but they won't score again.
What did that feel like? That felt like the Florida game, right?
It did. Well, what's interesting is what happened, right? They scored because why? Because these were the plays that had been scripted by really good offensive-minded coaches, yep. right? Who had yep. several weeks to script them out.
Pre-defensive adjustment.
Yes. Right? And so that doesn't surprise me, right? It is. It did. It felt exactly like Florida. And what's so funny about the media is, dude, they were trying to build this game up as it was going to be a game. And they were just – and we said on our last podcast this wasn't going to be a game, that we were going to hand it to them. I just thought we'd beat them worse on the scoreboard than we did. And so even after they scored – you know, the little sideline reporter, which I can't stand that stuff. They could get rid of the sideline reporter, and I'd be totally cool with that. You know, she's like, oh, yeah, they're talking to each other on the sideline. They're fired up, and they're like, yeah, we knew we could stay with them. I'm like, no, you can't stay with them. Come on, really?
Right.
I mean, it's just that's just made for TV BS is all that is.
It is. I agree.
And so, you know, he came off the sideline at one point in the fourth quarter, and he turned to his offensive coordinator, and you could read his lips. He was like, I didn't have time. So I went back and I paused it, and I went back to that third down play. And on that play, he actually had time. Alligator armed the ball like 3 seconds before anybody got to him. Why? Because he was scared. He didn't want to get hit again. That's why he did it. Right. And so this is a situation where we are blessed that we can get to their quarterback with four people. We don't have to bring the heat. And if we hit you early enough, you're going to be scared. And we don't need to do anything else.
Well, it's Saban's favorite thing, right? Affect the quarterback. And that doesn't have to be a sack. And Saban has said that for years. And the reality is it's as true as it gets, right? And so when you have a quarterback that's going to get happy feet, that's going to hear footsteps, that's going to get nervous, that doesn't want to get hit. It's the Jordan Jefferson sort of syndrome. And they're going to make mistakes. And some of those mistakes are just going to be incomplete passes. And some of them are going to be picks. And we had two and one, you know, return for a touchdown. And when you start impacting the quarterback in that way, man, it's going to be a long day for the offense.
Well, dude, let's talk about this very quickly, okay? Let's talk about the play that Ryan Anderson made, okay? Yeah. This goes back to the psyche of the kid. Now, let me be fair to Jake Browning, okay? I'm glad I wasn't in the pocket.
Sure.
and Tim Williams come after me when and pile on, you know, Jonathan Allen on top of it for good measure. So trust me, I'm glad it was him and not me. But when he threw that pass that Ryan Anderson picked off, dude, there was a minute left in the half.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 10-7 ball game. It's second and 10 at your 32-yard line. Throw the damn ball away.
Yep.
Right? And so he got the ball out. He threw the ball, you know, and this is not your Pac-10 school that you're playing. This is Alabama. And I'm so glad Ryan Anderson made that play and the athleticism he showed. I mean, he caught the ball, but, you know, just as good as O.J. Howard has caught the ball this year. And no knock on O.J. Howard. He just went up for the ball and took the ball from the guy. And the guy, of course, is not going to be able to tackle him. And Ryan Anderson. I mean, dude, what's interesting about this team right now is if Jalen Hurts is able to win them a national championship, he's going to get lots of praise. Okay. But you and I both know defense wins championships.
Sure.
At the end of the day, there's two things that you have to have. You have to have a defense and you have to have a running game. And the reason they are moving forward in this game is because of those two things.
No, I agree.
And so, and that's no knock. That's no knock on Jalen Hurts, right? No. I'm just saying that other team has got to be just kicking themselves in the locker room at halftime because they're like, "Son of a bitch, it was 10-7, and we threw a pick, and now it's 17-7." And dude, as soon as it came out in the third quarter, I'm like, "Well, now the game's really over because now it's a 2-score game, and now they got to throw the ball even more, and they can't throw the ball to begin with, and they can't protect the quarterback." And so, like you told your people, you're watching the game, right? Checkmate. Game over.
Yeah. No, you're right. When it goes to 2 scores, that's a big deal. That is a big deal. And it's just one of those sort of – it's that's where football becomes chess and not checkers, right? And so, yeah, I completely agree. You know, when he threw that ball, he had Reuben Foster, you know, just bullseye running right at him. And so – He was definitely feeling the pressure, definitely feeling the heat. And then Ryan Anderson, when he caught that and then just sort of stiff-armed the defensive back down, and I just kind of enjoyed that. It was like, you know, somebody may tackle me, but it will not be you. And I just enjoyed that physicality and the fact that he was able to get that in and run it in. You know, look, for all the stars on this defense – It's hard to find underrated players on this defense, but you know, I'll give you Ryan Anderson as one of them.
Man, I'm so happy for him though, because you and I've talked about, right, what he brings to this defense.
Yes,
and Alabama wouldn't be where they are right now without Ryan Anderson.
Completely agree.
Now tell me real quick about, give me your thoughts on Reuben Foster, because you know, I'm kind of catching you off guard here a little bit as far as what do you think the injury is? Because this is a guy that has played with a club on his hand all year, which shows you the lack of a comfort level with our depth at linebacker. Because, you know, Rashawn Evans didn't get thrust out there until Sean Deion Hamilton got hurt against Florida. Right. And so here you got Reuben Foster playing with a club on his hand, and he's covering, you know, running backs and tight ends, blah, blah, blah. Well, man, I don't know what he did to his knee, but when he came back out with that big brace, you could see him very gimpy. And he was out there, and I'm sitting here thinking, man, why can't we bring Mack Wilson? Why can't we bring Keith Hamilton? Why can't we bring somebody out here and give him a little rest? What do you think his status is?
Well, he came back out. I think he's going to be okay to play. You know, that was a scary play because, you know, we ended up with three guys down. And they've, you know, they all three very well could have been out. You know, Tomlinson, and then it looked like Ronnie Harrison. It looked like maybe he was going to go under the concussion protocol. And then you got Foster with the knee, but that's always scary. And so that was a moment where, geez, if we've got to take all three of these guys out, that's going to be frightening. I think that he probably would have spent more time on the bench if we had Sean Deion Hamilton available, and then it would have been he and Evans out there. I think that would have been what we did. I would like to see Keith Holcomb get some run. I agree with you. I just think that it's a hindsight sort of decision. You know, in that moment, the defense is clicking, and you just don't want to take anyone out if you don't need to. And so,
I know, but not to get ahead of ourselves, man. There's still one game left to play, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. I'm just thinking, you know, you score at the beginning of the fourth quarter, you're up 24-7. I just think, you know, maybe you go to dime and maybe you put, you know, maybe you put Ronnie Harrison in the box, or you put Rashawn Evans in there in the dime with the one linebacker, and you just get his butt out a little bit. He just seemed to be in there an awful lot.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what was the coach thought process. I think my thought process would have been trying to steal some plays, maybe try to steal a series with him not in there, and sort of shorten his game. Maybe not call him done for the day, but how do I shorten his, you know, play count the rest of the way? And then, you know, look, and what Saban's going to tell you is, when you start playing scared like that, that's when someone gets hurt. And so, you know, I can see that side of it too. I don't know where are you playing scared versus where are you being smart? Sometimes that's a hard line to sort of grab hold of. But yeah, I probably would have found myself, you know, how do we formation ourselves in such a way? How can we get Mac? How can we get Holcomb? How can we address this? You know, like you said, let's go to a dime and let's play some dime and get him out for a couple plays. I can definitely see where I would have gone that route.
What else jumped out at you on defense? Obviously, Marlon Humphrey gave up that early touchdown, and that receiver, you know, it's kind of funny, after he caught that touchdown, I remember commenting, I was like, okay, well, I was like, we're not going to see anything else from this receiver. And the people that I was watching this with, they looked at me like I was crazy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, here he catches a touchdown, right? And if you turn to people and you're like, okay, he's not going to get anything else. And he really didn't get much else the rest of the ball game. What else jumped out at you?
Well, you know, on that play, and what's funny, if you look at Marlon's stat line, I mean, he broke up a pass, and apparently that's all he did all day, except for provide blanket coverage, right? And the pass, look, let's take nothing away from that pass, was on time. That was on target. It was, like you said, that first sort of sheet of scripted plays. Let's make a little bit of an adjustment, and let's put some hits on that quarterback, and let's see how precision, you know, passer he is. And so it's just one of those things where you could almost predict that they were going to score first, and then you could almost predict that that's all they were going to get. And so not surprised by that. I liked, you know, we talk about unsung players on defense, Ryan Anderson being one. I liked Anthony Averett getting a sack. That's just, you know, when you can run, when you got everything else working for you and you can run Averett on a corner blitz, that is just embarrassing. And then, and I like Joshua Frazier. He has sort of been a pivot point for us all season. And, I like the fact that he got a sack and he was in there early and looked like he was making some contributions. So, that'd be a fun guy to get to see, really sort of blossom here this game and this next week and really have something to carry into spring practice.
No, that's true. Well, who was going to get your mini game ball in this ball game?
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't talk about him. But this is another play that I went back and rewound it like six times, and people were like, "Man, watching football with you is just a different thing." But Tony Brown, he had a play where he sniffed out a screen, and it was just, and I told the guys that, you know, the folks that I was watching with, I said, "Man, this is what football is." At its base, watch Tony Brown here, and so he's lined up on this receiver, and for a second there, he doesn't know what's going to happen. Is he going to run a route? Is it going to be a run? Is it going to be the other way? Is he going to have to go deep down the field in coverage? He doesn't know, but with every passing second, the opportunity of what he may have to defend goes down, and when that and the receiver comes straight at him, then Tony Brown knows it's a running play. And you can watch Tony Brown's eyes. He gets his hands out. I mean, it's just textbook. This is what you could look up in the football dictionary. He gets his hands up, and then his eyes go straight behind the receiver. It goes over the receiver's shoulder, and you can see him track to the quarterback rolling out, and you can see him look over the other shoulder to where the screen is being set up. And as soon as that receiver catches the ball, he chucks the guy that thinks is the guy thinks he's blocking Tony Brown, but he's just being, you know, sort of used. Tony Brown chucks him and makes the tackle for a loss. I said, guys, that's what football is right there. And that's Tony Brown, who started the season on the bench with some suspension, has come into a larger role with Eddie Jackson getting hurt. And he just – it just in that play, that was just – man, that was just a thing of beauty. I could go back and watch that 20 more times and spend, you know, an hour breaking down that play because it was just phenomenal. I really enjoyed it. I'm giving Tony Brown the mini game ball for that.
See, this is why I don't let you go first, man. This is why I don't let you go damn first. All right. So I was going to give Tony Brown my mini game ball.
For that play, or did you have him for something else?
I was debating between that play and between his sack of the quarterback.
Okay.
And because when he came in on a corner blitz and blew up the running back who had to shift from the left to the right to pick him up, and he basically ran over him to sack the quarterback, that was impressive. Because that is, you know, that shows me something, that they are giving him the opportunity to do that in the star. But I will let you enjoy the rest of what you discussed. I will shift over to the other guy that I wanted to give it to as well. And that's Rashawn Evans. Rashawn Evans came into this game. Obviously he is not, obviously he is on everybody's radar, but he's another guy like Bo Scarborough, who, you know, this is the first game of his career that he has been called on to do as much as he had to do.
Agreed.
He got thrust into a tough situation in Florida, gave up the touchdown play, just totally didn't look comfortable in space on that particular touchdown that Florida took advantage of him, you know, coming in the game. But, dude, he finished third on the stat sheet. You know, he even got to put his hands in the dirt late in the game and be a rabbit rusher, which he enjoys, which he didn't get to do in this game because he had to be a middle linebacker.
Yep.
And he got a sack, right? Yep. And, dude, just where would we be without him right this second? I mean, to be fair, you know, just like Tony Brown, the two guys right now, Minka and Tony Brown, and now Rashawn Evans stepping in, next man up, you know, embarrassment of riches, highly touted players. We'd be in a world of hurt right now.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I had Rashawn Evans, you know, down sort of on a list to maybe talk about, you know, for all the reasons that you talk about. So I'm glad that you went mini game ball with him. Talk to me about special teams.
Man, we should have given a mini game ball to our punter.
Yep.
Because in this game, where all the, you know, the lack of offensive production that we have talked about, you know, J.K. Scott was a weapon. And, you know, let's face it, he had three inside the 20. He had, you know, finished the day with eight punts for 46 yard average. And there was numerous times where he pinned him inside the 10. And like we talked about with defensive winning championships, I'm sorry, you pin him inside the 10 and you put our defense out there and you got to feel pretty damn good about that.
No, you really do. And this is, you know, this is one of those things. And again, it's sort of a Saban sort of mantra. He talks about affecting the quarterback, but he also talks about drive start. And he talks about that both offensively and defensively. And so for grins, I went back and looked at the Washington drive starts. And so this will get a little tedious, but they started on the 12, the 36, the 18, the 25, the 9, the 20, the 4, the 25, the 20, the 9, the 30, the 17, the 21. And at the end of the game, they got one on the 45. And Tommy, only twice in the game, and hell, one of them, they got the ball in the 45, only twice in the game did they cross the 50. That's defense, and that's drive start.
Well, and let's face it, man, that goes a long way in them scoring the one touchdown, right?
Right.
And but like you said, you know, while it's true for a lot of teams, this defense is just different. And you're just not going to put together many 13-play drives to go your butt down the field.
Right.
You're just not going to. Yes. Can you script them, and can you sit there and the 10 offensive coaches stay up for hours on end in the past few weeks to put together the drive you did that was 9 plays and 64 yards? Yes. What's funny about what we just said, where did they start that drive? At the 36-yard line.
Yep. Yeah.
So are you going to get that? Yes. Are you going to get that 3 or 4 times a game against this team? No, you're not going to.
I don't think so. You know, I liked Adam. He had one kick, 41. He made it. And Trayvon, we gave him praise. You know, we got to call both sides of this. We gave him praise for his play against Florida. You know, talk about drive start going the other way. His play, you know, fielding punts was it left a lot to be desired.
Atrocious. Let's call it what it was. It was atrocious.
Yeah.
And there was numerous times. And what I was actually surprised at is that we did not see Saban light his butt up at all.
Right.
None. I mean, there was no conversation. There was no put anybody else out there. I really thought I would see our Darius Stewart or Calvin Ridley at some point in that game. Because
or Xavier Marks, you know, someone out there, right? And we didn't, and so, you know, I don't know. I think Saban's, you know, he will get on to players, but I think he also knows, you know, when not to get on players, and so I want to be careful. I'm not necessarily saying anything about Trayvon. He is a true freshman, and so you know, maybe he's still getting some grace period there.
No, hey, dude. He's still doing something we couldn't do, right? But our job is to call it like we see it. And they punted the ball 9 times. And if you had gone back and added up the field position that we lost on those 9 punts, I guess we got to take away Jake Browning's quick punt, so call it 8.
Sure.
On those 8 punts that he got 373 yards total. 3 of them were over 50 yards.
Right.
So all I'm saying is of that 373 yards, if we added up those 8, I counted numerous plays, Dave, where there was at least 15 to 20 yards of lost field position.
Yep.
Dude, if I went back and counted them up, I wouldn't be surprised if we cost ourselves 150 yards. I'll be generous. I bet you we at least cost ourselves a football field of position in this game by how we did not field those punts.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. And I would speculate, and that's all it is. I would speculate that there's a score that comes with that in there.
Oh, sure. No, absolutely. Well, anything else on special teams?
No, I probably want to bounce off special teams. I'll probably hit it again when we're talking about the championship game. But holy goodness, man, what do you think about a rematch with Clemson?
And let's you know, we call it like we see it on this show, man. I didn't want to see their ass, okay? I was pulling for Urban Meyer, and it was making me throw up as I was doing it because I wanted Urban Meyer to win this game. I wanted revenge against Ohio State. I did not want to see Deshaun Watson. And so we were blessed to witness that game in Arizona, a game that we were lucky to win, right? Let's call it like let's be real here, right?
Yeah.
We won this game because tied 24-24 in the fourth quarter, Saban calls a great onside kick and was quoted after the game. I didn't want to give them the ball back because I wasn't sure if we could stop them.
Right.
Now, here's what I will say about this, okay? There are two things there's two things about this game that makes me feel better because I watched the whole game against Ohio State and I saw the same exact thing that we saw last year. They're running the same scheme. Sure. There is nothing different. They do a jet sweep. I mean, what's funny, dude, is it looks like I'm watching our offense.
Sure.
Okay. Because there's a lot of jet sweep going on with the wide receivers, and they're getting 7 or 8 yards on first down every play. So now they're lining up in a second and two. But here's the short version of your answer. Last year in that game, they picked on a true freshman by the name of Minka Fitzpatrick, and they picked on him with Hunter Renfrow. And Hunter Renfrow ate him up for 2 touchdowns in the slot. The difference in this game, in my opinion, is Tony Brown, as a junior with experience of being in the system, will handle Hunter Renfrow different. We will not be surprised by 5'10", 175-pound Hunter Renfrow, number one. Number two, there are two other people in the middle that will make this a different ball game. And the one of those guys is a 20-pound lighter Reuben Foster.
Yep.
And Rashawn Evans.
Yeah.
Here, a less agile middle linebacker core just got wore out by the nickel and diamond, Dinkin and Duncan. And I think this team with Minka in the back, which I wish Eddie was here, but he's not, with Minka in the back as a cornerback who is just all over the freaking place, and with Tony Brown and Rashawn Evans, I think we handle the dink and dunk better.
No, I agree. And you know, I think last year the biggest lament we had on our defense was the linebackers are vulnerable in the pass. And so, like you said, we had a heavier Reuben Foster, and we had a Reggie Ragland out there who's, you know, central casting middle linebacker. He's not a cover guy. And so you take this year's linebacker core. Now, for the sake of giving guys a breather, I wish we had Sean Dion Hamilton. But I like the versatility that this defense has in a way that last year's did not. This is a game, though. You know, I agree with you. This is a game that does make me a little nervous. We play a lot of teams that lose the game before the game kicks off because they know that they're playing Alabama, and the first time something goes wrong for them, it can snowball. Clemson will not have that. They took us, you know, within a hair last year. You mentioned the onside kick, which was a phenomenal play. But, you know, how many games in his career has O.J. Howard had 275 yards and Kenyon Drake, 100-yard touchdown return? So we had quite a number of big plays that, you know, we have to think that we may not get this year. So this is a team that makes me nervous. I can't remember the last time I've ever picked against Alabama. And I'm probably not going to do it today, but boy, I just about would. This is that game.
Well, I'm going to tell you, man, there's somebody else that I left off a minute ago and I shouldn't have. And so forgive me, but there's another reason I feel better matching up against this. Okay. In general, against this Clemson team, this is a faster defense than we had last year.
Oh, without question.
And so when you take the front four and the speed they bring to the table, and then if you bring the maturity of the DBs having another year of maturity, right? The Marlon Humphrey and the Minka Fitzpatrick, like yesterday was a great example. There was a couple times where Anthony Averett didn't need Minka's help, but Minka was there.
Yep.
And Todd Blackledge was like, Minka's all over the – you know, he didn't say freaking, but I like freaking. He's like, he's all over the place.
I know, I know what you're building up to. Get there.
Okay, Ronnie Harrison is the other X factor. Yes. And forgive me, Tony, I got to move you from second to third because the two players that I think are going to – we're going to look back in this game is going to be Rashawn Evans and it's going to be Ronnie Harrison. Because Ronnie Harrison is going to play in the middle of that defense the way we didn't have a player last year, and they're just not going to get some of the garbage crap that they got last year against this team.
Yeah, and think, you know, last year Minka and Ronnie were both freshmen. Marlon was a redshirt freshman. You know, those guys all are back and playing better this year than they did last year. which is something.
But just like you said, Clemson has seen it. We've seen it too.
Yeah.
And I do think there's something to be said too. You know, you got Saban once with Deshaun Watson. Dude, it's like Cam Newton, right? I mean, okay, take Auburn as an example, right? Did Auburn get us, right? Did Gus Malzahn get us early on with the Auburn crap? Yes. Has he gotten us in a little while?
No.
No. And so I just think we're going to see a different game plan for this Clemson team. And I think we're going to win the chess match.
Well, I hope you're right. I'm picking a very close game. I think it's 31-28. I think we may need Adam to make one for us.
Oh, so you think we might need Adam to win one, to win the game?
Yeah.
Well, I do not think that it is going to be as high scoring. I do think the big plays to OJ are not going to be there. But I do think that we are going to be able to control the ball. And I think our game plan is going to be to keep them off the field, and they're going to have the ball 20 to 25 minutes. They're going to be very successful when they do have the ball, a la Ole Miss. But I just don't think that they're going to have the ball enough to make the big plays. And I think we're going to be able to control the clock with the running game. And so I think this is going to be Bama 34, Clemson 17.
Okay.
I think that we are going to score a touchdown late to kind of put this game away. And I don't think this is going to be a nail biter late in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think that I think TV executives would not be very pleased to hear our pronostications for these games. You know, they're probably not pleased with getting a rematch, two Southern schools, and so the rest of the nation, you know, maybe less excited. So it's a rematch of last season. And if we're saying that the game's not going to be nearly as exciting, sort of big play wise as it was last year, I don't think ESPN wants to hear us say that.
No. Now I will say real quick too, that, you know, they didn't have Mike Williams, right?
Sure.
And they didn't have Deion Kane.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, I mean, this is just football, man, but if we can get to him with four, that'll be huge. And, you know, I wish I was a fly on the wall in these defensive meetings, because I wish I knew if Ronnie Harrison was going to get to shadow Deshaun Watson, because last year in that championship game, he only rushed for about 57 yards.
Right.
It seemed like he rushed for a lot more, but he only rushed for 57 yards. And, you know, just real quick, would you like to see a Ronnie Harrison shadow Deshaun Watson in this ball game?
Yeah, I think we do see something like that, and it'll be fun to sort of pick that apart from the beginning. You know, how we sort of match up chess pieces, and I think we rotate who we sort of spy him with. I think Ronnie will spy him some. I think Rashad will spy him some. I think it's going to be interesting how we mix it up.
And just real quick, what do you think about these two true freshmen? They're getting a lot of love, the Dexter Lawrence and the Farrell kid. Do you think we're going to be able to protect him in the pocket?
Yeah, I really like the line and how they're coming together. I think we are able to. Now I think we move the pocket, and I think we move Jalen. Hopefully we manage down the number of his just pure runs, but I think we see a lot more rollouts with him, a lot more design rollouts. But, yeah, I think we're able to protect the quarterback.
Well, just in general, man, they just had two great defensive ends on this team last year, right? Yeah. And I just don't think they have the – take nothing away from their players. I just don't think that they're going to bring the same type of pressure – with their front guys that they did last year.
No, I mean they had some top shelf talent, and they seem to always have that across the defense. And, you know, maybe this year not quite what they've had, but you know, what they did to Ohio State was impressive, and I give them a lot of credit. I give Dabo a lot of credit. There were a lot of folks, and sometimes it's just the glory of the moment, but there are a lot of folks predicting a matchup in this year's title. And, you know, at this time last year, when people were saying the rematch, you know, frankly, I knew that we were going to be down a quarterback and that we were losing a lot of defensive linemen last year. And I said, man, if either of these two teams comes back, it's Clemson. It's not us. So I'm excited that it's us as well as them. So, yeah, this will be fun. This is, you know, you'd have to go back and look, you know, when was the last time that two teams squared off again for the national title? So many times it was the, you know, in the BCS era, they got one and two together before that, sort of in the bowl system. So, you know, you'd have to get we'd have to get the podcast research department out and see when the last time that happened was. But I don't think it's been recently.
No, I don't think it has. And I will say that in that Ohio State game, I just didn't see much creativity from their offensive, you know, game plan.
Right.
And I don't think they really tried to run the ball at Clemson. We better pound them and not give up on the run. And so with the change in the offensive coordinator, it'll be interesting to see what the run pass distribution is in this ball game. But I hope that I think we can run on them, and I hope that we give it enough effort to make that happen.
Yeah, I think we will. You know, I think that you know, when we come back and talk about this game, I hope that we're underscoring that this game has been the breakout for Bo. And you know, if he racks up 150 yards, you know, maybe 23 carries, that might be, you talk about time of possession and controlling the game with the run, that may be the recipe. And I think it's out there. I think it's out there for him to get.
No, absolutely, man. It's going to be a fun trip. I know we are looking forward to going and checking it out live, and we'll be looking forward to reporting back to you guys after the ball game.
Absolutely. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.